My guest in studio today is Mr. Michael Stefanovic, recipient of the Queen's Birthday 2018 honor, member in the General Division. I'm very glad to welcome you in SBS studio, Michael, today. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Poliana. Thanks to SBS for having me here today.
First, I have to ask you what this recognition means to you.
It's a recognition of years of my service, but also years of excellent service from the teams that I've worked with or that I've led over the years with the World Bank in Washington or with the United Nations in New York.
Mm. So now you have received your honour for, I will cite, significant service to international relations in senior investigative roles with the United Nations and the World Bank. Now, that sounds very impressive to me and very interesting. Can we talk about your work a bit? What is your area of expertise or practice?
My area of expertise is in investigations. I was a detective here in Melbourne with the Victoria Police for about 15 years. I then went off to the UN initially in The Hague with war crimes investigations. I've also worked in peacekeeping, doing internal investigations of UN soldiers and police and civilians. I took time at the World Bank investigating World Bank projects all over the world for fraud and corruption amongst our beneficiary countries. And I then returned to the UN in New York as the director of the investigations division. So I was responsible for the internal investigations function of the UN in New York. So for the 130,000 soldiers, police and civilians under the flag of the UN and responsible to the Secretariat in New York, that was my responsibility.
That's really impressive, Michael. I suppose your qualifications are in international law.
I have a master's degree in international criminal law and a master's in police studies.
Mm-hmm. Police studies. Yeah. That's interesting. And also when you walked in a studio, you said you worked for the Victorian Police at a radio station.
I worked at D24. That's as part of our training in those days for, as young police. We were rotated through many functions and I had time at the Police Communications Centre, D24, in the old Russell Street Police building.
That's fantastic. So we are colleagues, in a way.
Your expertise is far superior to mine in that regard.
I don't know. Obviously, you could do anything that you put your mind in. Why criminal law? Why police? Why detective?
I always wanted to do it. An uncle of mine on my mother's side was a long-serving detective in Victoria Police, and after spending a weekend with him fishing in Warrnambool, I was hooked. Listening to his war stories about cases that he investigated and criminals that he had pursued for a long time, I decided that's what I wanted to do.
Well, now you are investigating very serious fraud and corruption and some involving major international corporations in parallel with the law enforcement agencies. Now, I think that could be very complex because probably you have to deal with the very sensitive political issues as well.
Yes, that's true. Like at the World Bank, we lent lots of money to governments for major infrastructure projects, such as a hydroelectricity dam, or a major highway or a bridge. And these are projects of hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. And everyone in some of these countries wants a slice of the action. It's probably And so we had issues with government officials seeking a cut. We had companies that were keen to win business who were willing to pay bribes. And we had people within those companies who were willing to inflate figures to defraud their own companies. So it was quite complex, but we, when I sort of took over as the manager of the investigations at the World Bank, I used my law enforcement background and reached out to the British Police, the Overseas Anti-Corruption Unit, the Canadian, Royal Canadian Mounted Police Corruption Unit, the FBI Corruption Unit, and others around the world. So whenever we had a case that we felt involved their jurisdiction, we would involve them very early so that they could then use all their coercive powers to investigate in parallel with us. So we would look at protecting the bank's funds and then they would look at the criminal accountability that flowed from that.
Yeah, I suppose that's very important work for our security as well in Australia.
Yeah, there's issues around, let's give you an example. If a developing nation enters into a contract for a significant infrastructure projects in their telecommunications area, that opens up all sorts of issues as to who, which governments are potentially behind some of the companies that may tender for those projects. Because there's intelligence issues attached to that. There's, as you can see in the public domain today, it's very sensitive within Australia. It's sensitive in the US as to which countries are getting access to, particularly to telecommunications contracts. And the World Bank's no different. The World Bank typically funds many of those types of contracts.
Let's suppose there is someone listening to us and thinking, oh gosh, that's very interesting work. I would like to do the same. What is the path? How can you really come to the United Nations and World Bank to work for them?
There's really, I would say now there's no classic path. Mm-hmm. I think in the past it was probably that if you did a law degree, you spoke French as well as English and perhaps a third or fourth language, irrespective of tremendous experience, that would get you over the line typically as an entry-level position. Mm-hmm. Now I think those agencies tend to look for people with real-world experience, mm-hmm. That they can bring into those institutions rather than building up the capacity internally. Certainly when I was there, what I did was try and bring in as many people from not just the common law world like Australia or the UK. I tried to make sure my teams had people from the civil law jurisdictions as well, because, again, many of the places we operated were civil law jurisdictions. So why would you stack your teams with common law lawyers or investigators when you can make hybrid teams that have got all of the experience? So it was really essentially that. So now, typically, what I used to say to my managers when they were doing their own recruitments was, do not recruit in your own self-image. And the last thing I want is a bunch of people like me doing the same job. I need people that have got broader experience than me, better language skills, better legal skills, better investigative skills, certainly in this day and age, financial skills, digital technology skills, and all of those things need to be brought to bear to do this. No one skill set now can master this. So it's not good enough that you are a detective or a lawyer. You need to have people who are real experts in their responsible areas.
Yeah. On different note, I have noticed that you've been regular speaker at a variety of the international investigations forums. Do you enjoy that? Tell us more about that. It's almost like transferring the knowledge, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And certainly at the World Bank, mm-hmm. I did a lot more of that. And that was really part of this idea of getting the international organisations such as the World Bank and the other multilateral development banks, such as the African Development Bank, Asian Bank, involved more closely with law enforcement and prosecution agencies. So historically in the past, the World Bank had was very late, even though it may have done a very comprehensive investigation. Before it forwarded the results of that information to law enforcement for a prosecution, it was 3 or 4 years late. And they just look at it and they say, look, this is ridiculous. You should have given this to us when it was fresh. Mm-hmm. We can't do anything with it now because we've now lost too much time and too much opportunity. So part of getting out and speaking to those other groups was to sort of stand alongside people who my teams had done demonstrable cases with. So we could say, look, here I am with the head of the British Police Anti-Corruption Unit, and between us, we have now done the McMillan's case for paying bribes in sub-Saharan Africa. Mm-hmm. And that was a very good case. So it was, we got up there and we weren't talking, prospectively about what we will do, but more, it was great to be able to get up and talk about real world examples where we'd worked in parallel with law enforcement partners and got some excellent results.
Have you ever thought to work in academia, teaching, lecturing?
Funny, I did 2.5 years with Charles Sturt University as a lecturer in Goulburn in New South Wales at mm-hmm. the School of Policing Studies, which was, it had responsibility for recruit training for New South Wales Police, but it also had postgraduate qualifications in investigations management for serving police and detectives from around Australia and indeed from across the world. So I had a number of years of that before I sort of returned to the UN.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your background now. Obviously, your surname tells me that you are Serbian. Tell us more about your parents, about your family.
Yes, obviously with Stefanovic as a surname, it couldn't be much more than Serbian. Look, my father came from Novi Sad. He came out to Australia when he was very young, in his very early 20s, after he followed sort of the traditional sort of post-war migration path. He went up and over the hills through Slovenia into Austria, sat there for 2 years, not sure whether he was going to America, Australia or Canada. He learnt English and a few other languages while he was there. He trained as a watchmaker and jeweller. He then got the letter that he needed to say that he was accepted into Australia, so he migrated to Australia. He again followed the sort of fairly traditional path. He worked at Port Kembla, pushing a broom for 2 years until he could save some money to set up his own watchmaking and jewellery business in Mildura in country Victoria. He then met my mum, who was a nurse of sort of Australian, English, Irish descent. And then I was born up there with one of my brothers, and we spent. We stayed there till I was about four, and then we moved to Melbourne and lived in Dandenong. And my father again set up his own watchmaking and jewellery business in Dandenong and ran that for about 40 something years.
What about your family? Do you have a family?
Yes, I've got
of your own.
I have a wife who's a New Zealander, and I have three kids. They've got a variety of passports. I have. My oldest boy was born in Australia, my middle boy was born in America, and my daughter was born in New Zealand.
International family.
Yes. Yes.
That's fantastic. Do you speak any Serbian at all?
No. When I was in The Hague, I learned some, but that was a long time ago. And I would say that I had survival Serb at best, but I spent a lot of time in the countries of the former Yugoslavia. I was very lucky. I got to work in Belgrade a lot.
I was about to ask that.
It was a beautiful city. I spent a lot of time up in Dedinje, which is a beautiful part of Belgrade. And I got to work with the Serbian Ministry of Interior, the MUP, on different inquiries we did. I always found excellent relations with them. I executed the first search warrant in Belgrade.
Oh, really?
For the Yugoslav Tribunal. And I had excellent...
Which one is it?
That was on Jovica Stanisic.
Yeah.
It was... I worked with the Ministry of Interior and the Belgrade prosecutor, I think Rade Terzic, I think, was the prosecutor at the time, to put our warrant, the international warrant, into a Serbian warrant that we could execute. And I found that they were totally professional. They did they assisted us the same as Victoria Police would have assisted the tribunal attending there. So when it was all said and done, it was a good experience, and I'm very glad that I got there. In Belgrade, I got to go to Novi Sad, see where my father was from, and again, another beautiful little town. And I'm very, very happy that professionally I was able to get across there.
Yeah, but at the moment you're working for London-based company. You're in Europe practically at the moment.
Yes, I've been basically commuting backwards and forwards from Melbourne to London for a long time now, for the last 2 years. We're working with a British law firm that specialises in anti-corruption, so companies that have been caught or have facing problems with the regulators for foreign bribery type offences. Working with those, but I've also worked with and I do some work more lately with an Indian firm, India's largest law firm. Also, again, same style of work, representing companies that have been facing inquiries from the World Bank and the other development banks. And then in the last sort of 2 months, I did a job in Bangladesh for the US government on human rights and potential breaches of humanitarian law in Myanmar.
So where is the home for you?
It's in Melbourne.
In Melbourne?
Yes, in Melbourne. I just travel a lot.
Okay. Also, because you are in Europe at the moment most of the time, do you have a time to go back to Belgrade or Serbia at all? Can you compare what's different from that time?
No. The last time I was in Belgrade, I think, was 2003. Mm-hmm. But I was there every month for about 2 years, nearly 2 years. So, yeah, you know, at that time, like, Belgrade is a European city. You know,
yeah.
It's my when I first arrived there, my first observation was I thought it was very similar to like Budapest or any one of those other, you know, like what similar cities in that part of Europe, and I expect it's only better. One thing I did frequent the there was an American sports bar in Belgrade, and I did frequent there. I also remember one of the places we used to eat was Pastuv, which is the which is a beautiful restaurant down at the horse racing track. I think there were some colourful characters that also ate down there. But you know, I have good memories of
Skadarlia.
I have some, you know, my memories of being in Belgrade, we're all good.
Michael, thank you very much for coming in studio, and thank you for your time. And I wish you all the best, all the success. And I hope next time we will have an opportunity and, you know, reason to talk again.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bojana, for having me. And again, thank you for acknowledging the award. And again, I think I'd just like to say it's really in response largely to the teams that I've led and the work that they've done that helped me to sort of get to this point where the government has recognised me with this award.
Thank you.